Welcome to the Assistant Lab podcast, hosted by Victoria Ratton and Arnel Martin.
This podcast is dedicated to the executive assistant profession, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
We've created this podcast for the outliers, the linchpins, the assistants who are serious about their careers. This is a podcast for those who are preparing for the future today.
This is a space for no-nonsense content, benchmarking and tracking industry and world trends, as well as interesting interviews with exceptionally inspirational people. The goal here is to stimulate new ways of thinking and being in this profession.
So, on with the show.
Welcome to this next episode of the Assistant Lab. This week's guest is literally royalty. Well, she's a pearly queen, so Cockney royalty. It is Vanessa Vallalee of WeAreTheCity.com. Vanessa is well known in the UK assistant profession. She's well known across the UK. I mean, she is dubbed the UK's most networked woman. But Vanessa's got a whole massive backstory, which she's shared on many conference platforms and stages. And so we take her back to East London, the East End, a 16-year-old Vanessa, and seeing the bright lights of the city, and talk through what her hopes and dreams were. Coming into the city, getting sacked, navigating her way through the corporate world, taking the journey to setting up the business it was We Are The City. And of course, no small business owner is without hardship going through this journey. I know it only too well myself. We Are The City has literally made waves for tens of thousands of women. It's been absolutely incredible. And I know a lot about this journey because I'm her mentee, have been for nearly a decade, and she hasn't been able to shake me off yet. But we also get talking to Vanessa about mentoring programs. EPA's program is finally launching in literally just under 2 weeks' time with Mentor City. So we talked about the trials and tribulations of mentoring, why it is actually needed to have a good structured programme in place, such as the one we're releasing. We also go back through the pandemic and now coming through this cost of living crisis and any trends that we've seen among salaries, gender disparity more generally. And we get stuck into all the areas that Vanessa's an absolute expert at. We, of course, know that a lot of people, it's not just unique to assistants, but a lot of people are feeling a bit stuck in a rut with their careers at the moment and maybe being held back because of gender, age or something else. So we have a really frank discussion with Vanessa about what her advice is. And of course, we look back on the lessons she's learned during her professional life and what she might have done differently and who has inspired her professionally. It's a really exciting, super motivating interview. I really think you're going to enjoy this. Welcome to the Assistant Lab, Vanessa. I'm so excited because I'm like the mentee you've never been able to get rid of. So I'm really happy.
Come on.
I'm not sure. And now, did I ever tell you how Vanessa and I kind of met?
No.
I bought a load of her books, I can't remember how many. Was it 50 or 100?
Between 25 and 50. I can't remember.
Yeah, and I bought a load of her books for all the assistants at Hayes when I set up the network. And Vanessa got in touch with me because she wanted to know who it was that bought all those books. And she hasn't been able to shake me off ever since.
The part of that story, I just left corporate, so I didn't have a salary or anything like that. I didn't have much money in the bank at all, and an order like that was amazing at that time because it meant I had a little bit of income coming in. So I tracked her down to say thank you, but yeah, I'll never forget things like that. So thank you.
Yeah, and here we are today.
That week.
Well, we know that struggle, Arnel and I, having gone through COVID. Well, you've gone through COVID with small business as well, and it's been like really tough. But before we get into all that, we always like to go back to like 16-year-old self. And I know, like, obviously you're really well known in the UK, and I know your story inside out, but we have got listeners all around the world and perhaps in bits of the UK that don't know who you are. So what was 16-year-old Vanessa up to?
16-year-old Vanessa was living in East London, in Hackney, in a tower block with my mum. No sob story, loved my roots, gave me a lot of grounding, showed me that people from different backgrounds, races, religions could all live very harmoniously, and we all helped each other. So she just finished school. She was very disappointed in her exam results, but she kind of knew that the writing was on the wall. When it came, I was never going to get A grades because I kind of missed quite a lot of school. She had big dreams. She could see the city from her bedroom window, and she knew that's where the money was made. And by going there and getting a job meant my mum didn't have to have as many jobs. And one day we could kind of move to something that didn't have 18 floors and a lift that was always broken. So she had big dreams. She was a little bit unpolished, a little bit gobby, and a little bit opinionated. So played up to all the stereotypes of being a kid from the wrong side of the tracks. But she was ambitious and she was driven, and she had nothing to lose at that particular point. So that's who she was.
Yeah, I mean, I love it.
In a lot of ways. I'm probably more the 16-year-old girl now. I'm out of corporate and I've got a little bit older than I was like in my 20s, 30s and 40s, I think.
So what did you make of corporate then when you went into it? Because like, now and I have worked in corporates as well, and we've all got our own opinions on it. I mean, the we've survived it. We're here.
I mean, for me, I wanted to get a job. I wanted to wear a suit. Right. I wanted to break that kind of that taboo that a girl from the East End couldn't get on the bus and go and work in the city. So, you know, wearing that suit was really important to me. And I remember I had a couple of suits. My dad bought me one, the same split with my mum, but very much in my life. And I had a couple of secondhand suits and stuff like that. And I remember that first bus journey. It was a blue suit. I can still picture myself in it, a much kind of slimmer version of me. And I had a little briefcase. Bless me. And I got on the bus and I felt so important. Do you know what I mean? I was like, this is it, you know, like city girl. I'm gonna make it and march my way into kind of NatWest Tower to do the job that I've got there. So obviously from that, I mean, I got fired from that job, technically fired. They wanted to kind of relocate me very far away because of a bit of an outburst that I'd had, which was quite right in terms of what the outburst was about. But from there, I jumped jobs. I went into tech because tech wasn't in the city at the time. Everyone was using pen and paper. And I had one skill. One thing I did pick up at school is I knew how to turn a computer on and use one, which nobody else knew. So sometimes there's that thing around capitalizing on the unique skills that you have. And you don't sometimes realize what they are, whether it's cultural understanding, whether it's your background or, you know, how you deal with people, you know, how you build relationships, the kind of stuff that can't be taught. It's just inherent and kind of in who you are. So I jumped through loads and loads of different jobs. My strategy was to jump jobs as quick as I could, because then that way I would earn more money. Because I was very kind of material driven. I wanted to sort my mum out. I wanted to buy a house quite young. So I just wanted to change the story or certain elements of the story for our family. So jumped lots of different jobs, built good relationships. In hindsight, didn't network enough, didn't seek the help of mentors. That kind of came much later in my career. But I very much punched above my weight, I would say. And I feel very comfortable kind of admitting it now. Like, you know, like they say, women deselect themselves from jobs if they don't tick all the boxes. Whereas I was more alpha in that respect. I was like, I can't do half of that, but I'm going to go for it anyway. And sometimes I'd get the job and I'd be like, oh my God, you know, how do I nail this one? And I'd read and I'd just listen to people. I've always been a big people watcher. And somehow I managed to wing it and kind of get to a senior position, a couple of senior positions before I decided to kind of exit out. So I think I worked in the city for about 30 years. And I saw a lot. I've seen a lot of change. I've seen a lot of change around gender. I've seen a lot of change around diversity conversations. I've seen a lot of change around culture. You know, back in my day, the drinks trolley would still come out on a Friday, and that led to all sorts of trouble. You know, obviously stuff that we've got in the press nowadays. But, you know, the culture was different. People could say things and get away with it. It was just part of what it was. And I've kind of seen that change for the better over the years, that these things are not acceptable. Obviously the conversation around women, I've seen that change as well. I've seen more women at the top, not enough, but more women rising to the top. I've seen more intersectional women, you know, coming through the ranks, and more conversation needs to be had because success doesn't just look like me. So I've seen a lot of change, I think, in corporate, you know, gender pay gap, even the transparency around that, even though, you know, gender pay gap figures are notoriously crap, but at least they're reporting, you know, at least we can see we're getting some visibility. And like recently, I think we hit the the number on boards. I think it's 40% of women on boards. I think on one of those stats, it was a couple of years early as well, which is great. It shows the progress of women on boards. Back in 2009, I think it's something like 7% of women on boards. But again, we need to look at the diversity of those women, because it's got to be all women. So there has been changes, but I still talk to youngsters that I mentor or young members of We Are The City, and they still talk to me about, you know, toxic bosses, microaggressions in the workplace, the fact they got passed over for promotion, they get talked over in meetings. So all of those things that we probably all recognise, they're still alive and well in corners of organisations, and they're quite hard to unpick.
And so you mentioned We Are The City. Obviously, I've known about it for
my baby.
Years. Yes, your baby. So what led to that?
Frustration, I think, being a senior woman in an organisation. And I've been so insular in my career. I was very much focused on how hard I worked, you know, how much output I could do. I never went to anything internal. I never sought the help of anyone else because I had the job title, right? So I'm supposed to know it all. And it was at a particular point, I remember I was sitting at my desk on London Bridge, I was looking at it and I was just thinking, there has to be another way. I think deep down in me, I knew that I was a bit of a square peg in a round hole in the organisation. I was always very entrepreneurial. And some bosses let me be the intrapreneur, and others tried to kind of keep me in a box, which was not good for me. And it was just that realisation that, actually, if I'm feeling this way, there must be hundreds of women looking out of their windows, wondering how they can connect with other women. Is this the right path? So I was moaning to my husband, you know, where's the website for me? So he built me a little website, which we called We Are The City. It was called something else. And then I realized someone else was out there called that. So he bought me a little website, and it was kind of further fleshed out. We had a weekend away in Spain and a place that I still regularly go. I was there a couple of weeks ago, and we had a bottle of wine, and we mapped out what this website would be and how it would solve world peace. And, you know, and the more wine we drank, the more this website was going to do. And I remember ringing back to all my mates in the UK, really hefty phone bill, you know, there was no Wi-Fi and stuff like that. And I was talking to them about kind of what would you want on a website and stuff like that. And there was a very expensive way to do market research. And then that was it was born. And, you know, we had a membership form, and I remember the first week, I think 10 people joined, and we were like, oh my God, we've gone viral. And when we looked, it was Stu's dad, oh, God bless his soul, you know, he's no longer with us. It was my cousin, it was my mum, and that was it. But, you know, we'd landed, and then we poured all of our savings into a little launch event at the House of Fraser. I don't know if you remember that one, Vic.
Yeah.
At the House of Fraser, where we had catwalks and, you know, all the women came, all the concessions were open, everyone's getting their nails done. And it was on the day when there was problems in the Asia markets, and there was a headline in the City on City AM that said, as the markets fall, the women go shopping, and a picture of all these women queuing around the corner to get into House of Fraser. But all PR is good PR, right? Roll forward now, I think it's about 70,000 women. We just had a big database clear out of people that, you know, don't talk to us or don't engage. We want to talk to engaged people. About 70,000 women. It has a sister site called We Are Tech. We've run awards. We've got about 1,500 award winners between tech and rising stars. We've run conferences. I think it's something like 130 events that we've run, and something like 18,000 women, maybe a little bit more, that have kind of come through our doors to learn new skills and network. So, and we got the support of about 100 companies behind us now, but it's taken years to grow. That has not happened overnight. It's been 15 years. Yeah. Many, many wobbly moments where it's like, are we going to survive this? Are we going to survive that? And somehow we're still here, you know. So you've got to enjoy the good times while they're there, but it's come with its bad times too. Mm-hmm.
Which I think
it's still there. So the website's free, right? So you can go there. There's loads of resources on there. Everything from, I'm being discriminated at work, I need help with menopause, where are the women's networks, where's some events that I can go to meet like-minded women, reading articles of inspirational women that have been there, seen it and done it. And not just senior women. My sweet spot is women in the middle, where it's really bloody hard, you know, where we don't get enough money for childcare, where we might have caring responsibilities, where we're just at that point of life where we might want to do other things. It just feels like wading through treacle. They're the women that I want to help. I want to get them through that using whatever resources are at our disposal. So that's my sweet spot.
And is it free for like women around the world to sign?
Yeah,
I know some of the legal stuff might be UK specific around our Equality Act and whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, we cover stuff like that, but we do interview global people. So globally, you know, all you got to do is just sign up your email. If you don't like what you receive, we don't spam you loads of stuff. It's a monthly email meant to inspire you. We might send you the odd educational opportunity to spark your interest around, okay, I'm here, but with some corporate education, I could potentially go there. But other than that, you know, all we're doing is just giving you stuff. And if you're members, like, we offer discounts to some of our bigger events, and you're the first to hear about stuff. So you've got nothing to lose, really. It's inspirational content.
Is there anything like this in SA, Anel?
We've got, yes, there's one specific site that I know of. But again, it's not something that a lot of people are plugged into. I think, again, like, as Vanessa was saying, if you're in that position and you are treading water, just trying to keep your head above, you know, sea level, it's often that people don't really engage. I know a lot of the companies have set up internal forums, but in a lot of ways, sometimes it's ticking a box. It's ticking a box saying we're doing something, where it's not really, you don't really feel that there's a sincere wish to get these people to the next level. So in South Africa, I think there's still quite a lot of work to be done.
Yeah. There's still a lot of work to be done in the UK, in all fairness. I mean, we tend not to work with companies that just want to say we're doing something with We Are the City to tick some box or some report that they're going to publish later on in the year. And they're quite easy to spot. You know, they're very quick to hand over their cash and stuff like that, you know. So it tends to be the companies that we work with, and the people that we work with within those companies are really passionate about this stuff. They really want to shift the dial, and they often put in a really lot of extra effort outside of their day jobs to make this happen. Mm-hmm. And as you quite rightly say, you know, Anil, with the employee relations groups, so networks that are set up inside of companies, we also run something called Gender Networks, which brings together chairs and co-chairs to share best practice. Mm. And that is cross-company. That's open globally as well. Mm. But, you know, we're all trying to achieve the same thing, which is to see if we can get a fairer shot, you know, and get that.
Absolutely.
And you know, get the resources that they need.
Now, obviously, on your events, I've attended many We Are the City events, conferences, and I know We Are the City's set up predominantly for women, but this is an interesting thing. Now, when I was in the insurance sector as an EA, my CEO gave me budget to get the group ticket for 10. And he said, I want some of the guys to go along as well, but I don't know how easy it's going to be for you to get them along. But I did. Mm. And we came to one of the We Are Tech Women conferences. And the guys, so I had 10 from this broken firm that I was at. And there was 10 of us when nearly half of them, I think, were men that absolutely loved it. Like, well, I remember one of them saying to me, this is one of the best conferences I've been to in a long time. Like, he said, I'm learning how I can be a better ally to everything you guys are trying to, or us ladies, we're trying to achieve. But also, he felt he learned a lot anyway. And he said, this is relevant for men to come along and learn. So
we had one of them. We do one for tech at the end of the year. We're doing it this year as well, called A Level Up. And it is about leveling the playing field for women. And we have half of the room, we won't sell a table unless there's three men on it. So last year we had about 250 men. It's a bit of a brave move on our part, because they could just say, tough, we can't do that. But they didn't. They all came. And we had about 600 people there. We had like about 300 men in the room, and they were speed networking and they were speed network mentoring at the end of the day. And I've spoken to quite a few, not the whole kind of whoever was there, but that went back from that event, went back into their organization, said we need to do something, and they're the ones that are driving it, and that's what we want. Because this whole thing around gender parity, we won't get there without men on the journey. This isn't about disempowering them and empowering us. It's about us working together and, you know, to achieve those aims, so that men that are in the room that will call out the microaggressions, that will look at a list and go, hold on, there's no women here, or will look around their leadership tables and go, oh, this room feels quite male dominated. You know, we need to mix it up and bring some women, some different intersectional backgrounds. They're the men that we need. But, and often or not, men really want to help. They just don't know what good looks like. And it is a bit of a minefield for men at the minute. They don't quite know what, I mean, it's different right back in our day, but they don't quite know what to say, what is not. I'm not saying they don't know what to say that is not inappropriate, because I'm sure they do, but they don't know quite how to help or what that looks like. So we can't just keep pointing the finger at men and going, you should be stepping up for us. Sometimes we need a broader, more conversation around what does that actually look like? Like, for example, if I'm spoken over in a meeting and you notice it, clear space for me. Mm. And, you know, if my idea has been stolen by someone else in that room, I need you to come back to me and go, hold on a minute, wasn't that what you was just saying? Mm. Talk to me a little bit more.
Yeah.
Silly little things like that cost nothing. So,
and you know, Vanessa, I think the whole concept of getting men into the room, if we are all as women sitting in a room talking about the struggle, you know, it sort of happens in a bubble. So I do
an echo chamber.
Like you said, that you need to have that cross-pollination. You need to have that discussion about this is how you can practically help me. You know, yeah. this is how we can move the conversation forward and empower them with not what they think they should do, but from a woman's perspective, what would be helpful. So I think that's amazing.
Yeah, 100%.
And it does kind of resonate with the assistant industry, to be honest, because we too often sit in a room, make all these decisions about our profession and haven't included HR and the C-suite on that journey with us. And people who are come from non-PA backgrounds and can bring something else into the mix. And it's something we do need to do a lot more work on. And obviously in the UK, we are 96% female to 4% male. Yeah.
It's really important, but also because you know my passion for EAs and PAs. So, I mean, we've always had a category for you guys in the Rising Star Awards since we started, right? Mm. So, because you do stand shoulder to shoulder with all of the other professions. And actually, you lot do run the companies, because without you, nothing would work, right? And I think a lot of people kind of realise that, but you don't always get the kudos that you should, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the more you can do and the more your listeners can do to push what you do as a profession in its mm-hmm. own right is equally important. So if I was talking to a group of bankers or consultants and we was going to do something around development of their career, yes, HR would be interested. Yes, the CEO might be interested. Why is it any different for EAs, PAs, assistants, you know?
Absolutely.
But you all need to step up as a collective. And that's obviously part of what EPA does, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, definitely. And obviously it leads nicely into my next question. We are finally launching our mentoring program soon. We
Yay!
Had it to go at the start of the lockdowns and then we had to park it. And it's really good because obviously there are bits of the UK, well, much like South Africa, that are really rural and you're not attached to a major city where you'd go meet. Like in days gone by, my mentors, I used to go and have a glass of wine with after work mm-hmm. in the city. That's how it was kind of done. But obviously we have got, you know, rural areas in the UK, especially Dorset. There's no PA network down here. It's a very, like, it's an odd county because it's mostly tourism. They're trying to make a mini Silicon Valley in Bournemouth.
Mm.
So they're trying to make stuff like that, but there's not lots of industry down here because Dorset makes most of its money in the tourist season. Mm. So for a Dorset PA to have a mentor, well, it's probably been quite difficult. So this online platform, it's like a bit of a match.com, but professional mentoring. So you've set your profile up and you're then automatically matched with potential mentors, mentees. But I have said openly on stages how if it wasn't for people like you, Vanessa, and being in my corner as my mentor, I wouldn't be where I am today. In fact, since I've set up EPA, I've probably phoned you. I've lost count the amount of time saying, I'm walking away from this. I'm done.
We've all got those people at the end of the... I mean, I've done the same thing. Do you know what I mean? It isn't... And sometimes I think the mentor's really, really important. It's not a silver bullet, but it's definitely mm-hmm. part of the package mm-hmm. that you need. But it's having that sounding board. It is, I've got an idea. You know, what do you think of this? I've hit this dilemma. It's just a different perspective, a safe space for you to kind of talk to another individual about what you're experiencing, you know. So I think, you know, I can't advocate enough for mentors. So I think it's great that you've got a platform.
Yeah.
I've got a fantastic colleague in my network called Sarah who always says, when you, in your career, you are always taking the stairs, but if you have a mentor, they invite you into the elevator.
Yeah.
And that always stuck with me. It was such a good analogy. You know, some of the difficulties, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's a big portion of wisdom and education that can be passed on, life experience. So it's, I think it just gives you those shortcuts so that you don't have to make the same mistakes. You don't have to do the hard graft. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to me, that really struck with me. I always have that picture when we talk about mentorship.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is with mentors, what you've got to make sure from the mentee's perspective, that they've got time, mm-hmm. that they really are going to take this seriously. There is nothing worse than having a mentee. And I speak from experience where you're giving them your time and you're giving them ideas. And then they come back to you at the next session and they say, I didn't have time to do that. Oh, I got busy and things got
annoying. There's no forward momentum.
Mark, make sure that you're dedicated to it. That person's giving you that time and that time needs to be respected. Mentors.
Yeah.
This also is important because you've got to invest in that person. You can't cancel those catch-ups, right? When that person's preparing to see you, you've got to come to that table as prepared. You know, you've got skin in the game for that individual. Mm-hmm. So, you know, thinking about what's going to accelerate them, what books could they read? You know, what TED Talks maybe could they watch? So every time you're giving them resources and advice in that you're open to telling stories, you know, or maybe it's something that you can't solve. Okay, let me think of my network who I can connect with, who can have that conversation. So where I see the mentee and mentor side of it sometimes go wrong is it's easy to go, right, I need a mentor, and then talk to people, yeah, I've got a mentor, and it's like a badge that we wear. But are you actually getting anything out of that relationship? Have you actually thought about, I'm going into this relationship, this is the skill that I want to hone. So say public speaking, for example. So I need that mentor to help me with that particular thing. Otherwise, if it's too broad or you haven't thought about what it is.
Focused.
Mm. It goes everywhere. The conversation goes everywhere. And then people end up just meeting each other just because neither of them want to walk away. Yeah. And that is a waste of everyone's time. So I think before embarking on any form of mentorship, one, if you've got the time. Second, do you know what it is that you're looking to achieve? And the third thing is, can you measure success from that? Can you look forward after you've spent 3 months with someone and go, okay, this is how I've moved the needle, or these are the things I've got more confidence to do? Because if you can't measure it, then there's no parameters to see whether that's been a good investment of your time or theirs. Yeah. And however you want to equate it, whether or not you're in a business that makes money by the hour, time is money for all of us.
Yeah. And Vanessa, you make an exceptionally good point. Your intentions about, you know, especially if you get a mentee, is this person just wanting to say, you know, we had the experience with one of our very, very top assistants. One of the junior assistants simply wanted to say, I'm being mentored by this person, but they weren't willing to actually put in the work. So I think also the intentions, if both partners are really committed and have those good intentions and have set those goals, you do get better results.
Absolutely.
You know, I think what I loved about when I was involved with mentorship is I was learning from my mentee at the same time.
100%.
It's not, I give you everything. It really becomes a collaboration. It becomes, you know, and you also learn a lot about yourself personally. So for me, it was a very fulfilling journey. And you really feel for that person who's receptive, who has those good intentions, who takes on board what you offer. Mm. It can be absolutely magic.
Yeah,
and that's why we picked Mentor City, because some of the interesting feedback I took from assistants on what they wanted out of a mentoring program was greater accountability and like structured goal setting. Where when I came into the city as a teenager, you know, mentoring was like just quite an informal thing. But I totally get that. And, you know, people do want some framework and structure around it. And the Mentor City software allows you to record each meeting. Yeah. So you've got those goals there.
We'll have to look into that, Vic.
Yeah, honestly, I'll send it. But this is why I contacted you about it, Vanessa, because the other interesting piece of feedback I had from senior assistants who said, Vic, I don't necessarily want to be mentored by another assistant. It might not be something assistant specific. It may be that I'm involved in a wider part of the strategy in the organisation, or I've been, you know what I was doing at Hayes. My role was huge. And it could be a confidence issue, which frankly, like, you know, loads of other professions could help with that. In fact, it might actually be a good thing if we had some outsiders come in and give their perspective.
Can help with that.
Pollination.
Yeah. There's an email in your inbox from me.
Oh, okay.
Amongst all
the inbox of about 900, I'll find it.
Don't, the bane of my life. So obviously we've all been through COVID and the pandemic. Yeah. Now we've got global inflation, cost of living, all sorts going on. But things did sort of regress a little bit for women during that period.
We on the lion's share, you know, the homeschooling of the additional work that went on in the home. And unfortunately, Vic, some of that is, there's a legacy to that. I was literally at an event last week where we was talking about that. There's some research that shows that that's still going on in places, because it was a habit that we kind of all developed, that the things that we did back then, we're still continuing to kind of do, you know. So yeah, we did go backwards, you know. We go backwards every time there's a war, right? Every time that there's a pandemic, every time there's something massively culturally in society, women always seem to be on the back end and bearing the brunt of it.
The shock absorbers.
I wish I could tell you a better story, but I mean, COVID was something else. I think when you look at it now and you think that's the plot line of a film, you know, you couldn't imagine that something would happen where we were all locked in our homes, where we couldn't socialise, we couldn't see our family. So there was, I mean, obviously there was massive downsides to it. But there was also this wonderful sense of coming together and belonging and family, you know, where we was all with each other, solidarity, you know. So they're
going down.
Absolutely. So give us a chance. It was like almost like some higher being. And I'm not religious, right? But just said, slow down, you lot. I mean, it was a very vicious way of doing it. But yeah. I think we all, if you look now how people work differently, if you look at people's approach to life, where people up sticks from busy London and went and lived in rural places, Vic, you've been one of them, you know, it totally changed our mindset around how we work and how we live and what's important in life.
Mm.
But also there was pretty strong business evolutions that happened over that period. Things that people said that couldn't be done. Like, for example, world of banking, right? There is no way you could have traders at home through regulation. You know, we just wouldn't be able to do it. They would have marched you out of the building to somewhere secure if you would have said something like that. And yet within 3 to 6 months, the banks had traders at home and the regulators found a way around it, you know, and we were doing it. You know, people that, I mean, I remember a couple of our clients didn't have the infrastructure for that many people to work from home. They'd bought 200 licenses of, you know, to a provider to enable people to ad hoc work from home. They weren't built for all of a sudden we've got 60,000 people working from home. Their tech just wasn't up to scratch, but somehow they did it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I mean, this innovation and this mindset of, let's just get it done. It's only something that happens like that is so monumental that a little bit of that bureaucracy just disappeared. And it was just,
yeah, we just have to make it happen.
And people who otherwise wouldn't have had their ideas heard, it was fair game for everyone, you know, to put your ideas. And, you know, you saw people on Zoom meetings, all right, we can't go up the pub or we can't go and do the things that we used to do. You know, we had book reading clubs, we had cycling clubs when we were allowed out. You know, everyone was like, this is what I've baked. You know, we all become bakers. And but we got an insight into other people's lives. We saw into people's living rooms and we saw people's kids run across and dogs bark in the background. And all of a sudden, it's this realization that we're just people.
Everyone's human.
Regardless of big salaries, fancy cars and all the rest of it, none of that protected you from COVID. We're just people. And I think an element of respect for everyone is one of the plus points that came out of that. We all went on our own journey, whether we lost parents, grandparents, you know, whether, you know, for some people that were stuck in at home with people that were a danger to them, you know, there was a lot of downsides to that. But on the flip side, I think there was a lot of realisation moments that were very important as well.
But there's been some interesting bits on women in leadership, though. I mean, you look at, like, politics, like Jacinda Ardern stepping down as Prime Minister.
Lots of them. Nicola Sturgeon.
There's been a few. They're not the only two. Like, and there's been women literally stepping out of leadership saying, actually, COVID's made me realise.
There's a piece of research on that. I can't think who it was. I saw it on LinkedIn, but just about this mass exodus of women that were in senior leadership positions that was kind of like, I just don't want to do this anymore. And then obviously the press dress it up as a women can't cope and stuff like that. But actually, it's quite empowering for a woman to say, I've had enough. Yeah. And walk away. And they, yeah. those women need to be saluted because they no longer want to be slave to the system. And they realise that life is too short, right? And they may want to go off and do other things, work with charities, work with schools, set up their own businesses, you know, the world. You know, sometimes you've just got to make that decision. And don't get me wrong, as someone who's done that, it comes with its prices, you know, like being really grateful that someone's bought copies of your book. When you've not got a P2P in, you know, so it is. It comes. You have to have an element of bravery, and but you do get through it in the end. Somehow you get through it.
Didn't you release some research in partnership specifically on the tech sector? I think it was like a couple of months ago.
It's last year. We did a survey on the barriers that women face in tech. Which is not dissimilar to the barriers women face in any industry. Some of your listeners will probably recognise it. You know, lack of visibility of role models. There was pay inequality in there. There was, not getting enough from the men in terms of allyship. One in five women in tech are thinking of leaving, which would be a travesty for the industry because there's only 21% of women in it in the first place. Yeah. And we struggle to get girls into tech anyway, even though they outperform the boys. So there was a lot in that research, and we did actually do the conference. That's what Level Up tends to be about, which kind of spurned that. But let's say we've just got a lot to unpick, and the plates keep shifting as well, because we had these barriers that used to exist when we were all in the office. Now we have these additional barriers around visibility and stuff like that. Now a lot of us are at home, so some of it you have to throw up in the air and kind of, you know, okay, like, let's start again, let's look at how we work that. We don't have enough data yet post-COVID to really get into here's the knock-on effect of some of that around women in promotions, around women in pay. We've got some, obviously it's been a while now, but these things don't tend to play out. It's much better to look at a data set over a good few years to really see
how the ripple
that has affected. And don't get me wrong, I mean, there's other reports that say, you know, that women have thrived since then, because, you know, it gave them a chance to engage with people they wouldn't have always otherwise met in the building. You know, people sprung up informal conversations. It enabled them to expand their digital network as opposed to their physical network, where they might not necessarily be making those connections. So, you know, there's always going to be a to and fro in terms of what report that you read.
It's interesting because Elon Musk, whether you love him or hate him, I've got to be honest, I'm enjoying Twitter at the moment. Don't shoot me. but he's just installed a female CEO, and I've literally
already she's been attacked. Like,
yeah, oh god,
she came out of the woodwork on her voting history, what she's pro, what she's against, and stuff like that. Literally, any woman who goes into a senior position, there's people foaming at the mouth to tear her down.
Yeah.
And she's got to sit back and watch and just hope that she proves them wrong. Do you know what? It was a really good piece of advice my boss once gave me. Senior leadership team, and there was one woman, he was a guy, there was one woman who couldn't stand my boss, and she would take any opportunity to throw an arrow at him, right? Mm. And every time he went wrong. And sometimes she was quite rude with it. Mm. And I said to my boss, how do you cope with that? How did you not retaliate, you know, as a senior leader when it gets that personal and that probing, you know, against your capability? And that's basically what he said. I don't have to say anything. I'll prove her wrong with my output and my delivery. Mm. And he did. He went on to deliver some great projects. And obviously the egg was over there in terms of her face, who was kind of tearing him down all the time. But he said, it just makes me more determined to go into an exceptional job. And he wouldn't play to it. And it's just a great piece of nugget of advice. Sometimes, you know, the best thing is to play the quiet card and just focus on what you're doing and deliver.
Getting it done.
Well, as long as she's got a good assistant, she should be.
Absolutely.
Just saying, she should be feeling strong. For sure. So tell us a little bit about Rising Stars, because we had a little nutter about this before we came on.
So Rising Stars, again, I set up back in 2014, I think it was. So it's been around 9 years now. because there were a lot of awards for senior women. There was none for the women in the middle. It's the same thing. I want to shine a spotlight on those women. And by doing so, I know I'm going to make them noticed in their organisation. They get visibility on LinkedIn, everyone coming out going, oh my God, we used to work together. Everyone wants a piece of their action. And they go on to do amazing things. I mean, we've got, 950 winners on that award side. And in the alumni of that are authors, Queen's Honours, people that have set up their own business, countless little new generations of rising star babies. You know, women that have gone on to set up their own community groups, you know, because there's nothing in their area or there's nothing in their industry. So it's a real feeder for good stuff in society and in the workplace. So we've just celebrated our shortlist, and then we announce the winners next week. And then we'll celebrate them in July, which hopefully Vic, you'll be at. And then we don't just stop there. So we're not an awards organisation that gives you a glass object and says, right, we're off now. We have relationships with Warwick Business School. So all of them will go to Warwick up at the Shard. And spend a day with their professors. They get a membership to Charter Management Institute and all of their resources and their events. They record videos that go into UK-wide schools that kind of, you know, to inspire that next generation. And we're always looking for opportunities. I put as many of them on stages as I can. You know, when I get a little request in my inbox, rather than saying, is this something I can do? I'm like, who in my rising star cohort could do that? So just opening doors of opportunity, and they pay it forward, which is beautiful. So they open up doors of opportunity for others. And that's what I love. So it's a big old family, too many for me to recognize. I had it the other week. I was sitting outside Liverpool Street and some girl walked past and she said to me, you changed my life. And I thought, that's a big statement. Right. And I just kind of looked at her and I said, are you sure you talked to me? She went, yeah, I won one of your awards a few years back. And I went on to be promoted and I now lead the department and stuff like that.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. Didn't recognise and I felt really guilty. But how can I recognise 950 people, especially with menopause and ADHD? Come on. What happens, right? So, but it was lovely. So little things like that, when you hear things like that, it makes all the hard work worth it because they are carrying the baton. Mm. I'm not going to be around.
That's legacy. That's
what's important, right?
That's something that you're putting into the world that's moving forward at its own momentum now, where, like you said, people are now paying it forward. And that is a magical thing.
I just sit back and watch. And then I see two photos of them pop up where they've formed a friendship and they're now doing something together. And I love it. Literally.
That's just amazing.
So amazing before we come along, right? But just playing a little tiny, tiny piece in that person's story in some way, whether it gave them more confidence or, you know, whether it opened the door of opportunity.
It's shining the light.
I love it. There are so many incredible women out there. So many. I read their stories when the nominations come in. And I'm like, oh, God, I just want to reach into my computer and grab you and go, look how wonderful she is, you know. And some of them have just worked for the wrong bosses and they've worked for the wrong organisations and they've been silenced early on in their career. And they've grown little acorns into massive trees around things that they can't do and stuff like that. And I just want to wrap my arms around all of them and saying, you don't realise what you're capable of. You truly don't. Surround yourself with the right people. Have the vision. Have the goal. Don't give up. Be tenacious. You know, get people to help you.
This is why you got on so well with Jacqueline Gold, because she was exactly the same, especially with her WOW awards that she used to run every week.
Every Wednesday,
women in business.
She was loving woman. I didn't know her too well. I interviewed her on my Instagram.
Yeah.
I knew her through the awards, obviously, for yourself and Katie.
Yeah.
But she just had a warmth about her.
Yeah.
And obviously, in her passing, you see everyone come out. There was not that anyone would say a bad word, but you cannot say a bad word about Jacqueline Gold, because she was just the most magnificent woman who left a legacy, 100%.
Yeah. And that's
one of my absolute role models.
Yeah, she, and that's the thing. It's still, not even a few months on, it's still shocking she's gone, but what a legacy she has left behind. I mean,
100%. And there's lots of women that, you know, that are on this world for far too short a period of time. And that's another thing. Jacqueline was the epitome of women supporting women. And that's, I think, if we take anything away from her or other women that we've lost as well, it's that we should be lifting each other, not tearing each other down.
Mm.
Fixing crowns while no one's watching, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you're my only, version of royalty, I'm afraid to say, the pearly queen.
City of London. Do you know something, just a real quickie, I was over at the Old Bailey. I do get to do some pretty strange things, but I was invited to lunch with the Old Bailey judges, which was fascinating, you know, with their wigs and gowns and things like that. And, you know, obviously that's City of London, Corporation of London, and I dropped in that actually I'm the pearly queen, City of London, and some of them got it.
I would have loved to have been a fly in the room with that.
Oh, I've had quite a week, Vic, honestly. So again, not name dropping at all, it's just happened. It just was this week, I was at the CMI event, and some of the speakers got to meet the new Duchess of Edinburgh, previously Sophie of Wessex, who is an absolute supporter of women, right? It's been a long legacy. She quietly goes about her business, but I actually got to meet her. She's a lovely woman, but obviously in my animated way of talking, I knocked my glass flying of water. Poor fella next to me was mopping it up. Now, bear in mind, I've got form with the royal family, right? So even when I went to get my OBE, they tell you four times, right, how you greet the person that's giving you the award. Mine was Prince Charles, obviously the king at the time, no, king now. They tell you four times that when you talk to him, and then you have to take three steps back, and then you curtsy, and then you exit off. You can't turn your back to him. Four times they told me, got my medal, finished the conversation, went to go off like that, remembered, my mum said she could see horrifically what was going on in my head, decided that actually, no, I was supposed to take steps back. So then kind of done this few steps back, and then done this really elaborate kind of curtsy that looked more like a dance move, my mum said. So if ever there is like a file in the royal household, there's two blips on my name. Knox walked over and she's talking, does not follow instructions, but hey ho. So that's that.
Now we've, and now and I have got inboxes full up of emails. It's from assistants all over the world. Yeah. They're stuck in a rut. They're perhaps maybe even bored, plateaued. They've lost confidence. They're just kind of hit a lid. And some of them are male PAs as well. But like, we know that you know our profession really, really, really well. But just off the top of your head, like, what are some quick fire tips you'd give them? I mean, you've already mentioned some of it already, but.
So I think it's working out what the rut is, because sometimes it's not work. It's other things. But work is a really easy way to kind of say it's got to be something. So maybe it's work. So I think first of all, identifying what the rut is. And then finding the support to help you talk it through. Because you know, deep down, you probably know the answers. And some of them may be really difficult decisions. So you don't necessarily want to face that until it's blatantly obvious. So sometimes just talking to someone who's got a really good coaching style, doesn't have to be a coach or anything like that, but talk to someone who's not in your industry, that's not in your close circle, that is someone almost like a stranger. I'm not asking you to go and hang out at bus stops and stuff like that. Talking to someone who's independent, because sometimes the answer to that independent is very obvious to them.
Yeah.
And you just won't ask yourself the question because you know what the answer is. And that answer might be difficult and involve a lot of difficult things. So I think ascertaining what the problem actually is, and that may take you months to come to that conclusion as well. It might not be quick fire. And then once you know what the problem is, it's kind of starting backwards and going, okay, I might not be able to solve that overnight, but what are the steps? And this goes around to your goals, whether it's goals to achieve work or whether it's goals to get out of this hole that you found yourself in, equally important. So what are the small little things that I could do initially, first off? And they turn this sometimes as eat the frog for breakfast, things that you don't want to do, but procrastinate about. What are the little things that I can do that will make me feel like I've got a sense of momentum and at least I've started on the journey? Because if I do those little things, it's going to give me the confidence to know I'm heading in that direction, however long that pathway may be. So I think that's a first step. It's really easy to think, you know, I've got this problem, and if I just do this, it's going to solve it. Often there are tentacles that go off into other things, whether that's jumping jobs, whether it's jumping professions. So, for example, you're in this profession now. And again, I see your profession in a multitude of different ways. It's project management, it's business management, it's relationship management. There's so many different aspects, whether or not you choose to cite those as skills, which you should. You know, you may be thinking, actually, I want to go and take a bigger role within the business or whatever. How do I do that? So what network do I need? What are the skills that I need to learn? Do I have the right people in my circle? Is there someone that I can articulate what it is that I want to do or what those goals look like that I know knows me well enough that's going to go and repeat that in another room? Okay. So that's sponsorship, that advocacy. So I think that's a good starting block. We often feel better. It's the same with anything, right? Whether you're, you know, like you go through periods, maybe just after Christmas, whatever, you're feeling really unhealthy, you've drunk too much, and maybe you feel you've eaten too much and stuff like that. And it's like, I'm going to go to the gym, right? So you literally hit that gym button and you go, I'm on the journey, you know? Even if you sit with your gym kit on and you keep it on all day long, I'm on that journey, you know, I've got the gym pants on, I've got the trainers on. So sometimes it's just those little things that you can do that keep you on the journey. But again, back to your thing around having a mentor. And sometimes it can be a mentor, not just for work. Sometimes it's that life mentor that you need that is just going to hold your feet to the fire a little bit and keep you accountable. Yeah. So that's, I'm not going to send them go by the ocean. I think small steps.
Yeah.
That would be my advice.
And now it's literally by the ocean as well now. So
yeah, I'm also one of those people who's immigrated to the countryside, you know, tired of the city. So literally made that move. You know, if that's one of the blessings from COVID, that would be it.
Yeah, absolutely. I made my transition out to greener pastures many, many years ago, and I've never regretted it. I look at my garden, they're turning the field over where I live at the moment, which means all the lovely little animals like the little mice and stuff like that make a beeline for my garden. So it's going to be literally as I run back to the house from my shed in the garden, it's like dodging the mice and stuff like that, the field mice and the little shrews. But, you know, lovely
I'll hear you.
World.
I'll hear you in rural Dorset. I mean, I'm surrounded by farms here, so it is really surreal. Like when I first moved, I couldn't sleep for 2 weeks because I'm so used to police sirens in London and people like.
Yeah. I notice it when I'm in London now, and just standing there, and it's just the noise, you know, that you get.
Yeah,
it's quite noisy at the moment because I've got tractors turning the field over. But even they're mesmerising to watch, you know. And, yeah. If I do my normal thing where I lose focus and I find myself looking out the window for an hour when I've got big deadlines to hit, going back to the ADHD stuff, you know, so that is like, yeah, it's quite nice to do.
Yeah. Any lessons in life, like anything you regret doing that you wish you'd done differently?
Well, I made some pretty incredible impulsive decisions in my lifetime that I look back and I think, do I regret them? I think regret's a big word. I would have done it a different way when I look back now. They're all part of the fabric of what happened and who I become and why I am the way I am. So in that respect, I wouldn't go back and erase any of it, I don't think. There would have been times where I would have called more stuff out and stuck up for myself a little bit more. Times that I had a bit of a chat with myself as well and say, actually, you know, you're not just that little girl from the council estate. Like, own this room, like earlier on in my career, because it took a little bit of maturity and getting older and obviously having the opportunity to do some of the stuff that I've done to feel confident walking in most rooms. But don't get me wrong, there's still some that I walk in and I'm like, I don't belong here. I was a little bit like that with the judges at the Old Bailey. I was like, how did I get in here? If I ever thought I'd be in a courtroom, it would be from my background, because I got into a lot of trouble when I was younger. I never, maybe not Old Bailey level, but, you know, it was more that my thinking, I'd never be sitting here doing this thing. But, yeah, I think I'd be a bit less hard on myself. Mm-hmm. And I'd realise that it's not, life is really about people that you love and, you know, friendships and animals and just the smallest things, planting a bulb in the ground and watching it flower over the spring. And I don't mean to go all fluffy, but it's like, I'll just give you a quick example. My daughter was saying something this morning. She's had her tonsils out. So she was like, oh, I need to get back to uni and I need to do this and I need to do that. And I'm getting really, really stressed. And I'm like, is anyone going to die if you don't do any of that? No. So chill, get better and stuff like that. So if I can give her that advice, I'd already given myself that advice as well when I was younger. It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme.
I love that, really love that. And as like we've all been inspired by people, but is there anyone that's inspired you through your profession?
Loads of people. Yeah, you. You and your, and I know I'm going to say, but you and your tenacity. Not been easy ride, Vic, right? But you just come back and you do not let go. You've held on to that bar through thick and thin. You built this organisation. You've got other people along the journey with you. There's been times where it's been an absolute nightmare where you're inbox full of moany people, if I can mention that. Do you know what
yes,
I mean?
You can. You can.
You just do not give up because you want to help other people. So, yes, you are definitely on that list.
Well, you know when you're a really old lady and like you've stopped working?
You mean when?
You're not old. But when you are like a really old lady, I'm still going to be there asking for advice.
We'll probably live on the same farm, Vic.
Yeah, probably from French bulldogs. Yeah,
absolutely. Just
love it.
The people like you, people that just refuse to give in, people that just drive change. Like, and it's tiring doing what we do. And even like, I love what I do, but sometimes I look at the headlines and I'm like, I feel like I'm pushing the proverbial uphill. And I'm like, will I ever see the change that I would love to see in my lifetime? And do I continue to give it that much time? But I can't give up. I'm part of the collective, the yous, the campaigners, the lobbyists. There's a whole heap of us that all do different things and serve different communities. And if we give up, then nothing moves. So, yeah.
Now and I were having a similar conversation just yesterday, weren't we, now about that?
You can't give up. And don't get me wrong, I think there comes a point where everyone's played their part and you might want to go off and do other things and stuff like that, and that's in the future, I think, for all of us. But and also because you have to hand it off. Like, I look at my rising stars and I'm like, you guys have got to do my work. Sooner or later the old lady needs to go knitting and have more dogs, you know. So you lot need, I'll be there to advise and coach and stuff like that, but that generation needs accessible role models. They need people that are just 10 years above them now. You know, I've been out of corporate for 10 years. It's, don't get me wrong, I don't think I'm that moved. I'm not that far away that I don't exactly know the challenges are just the same. But, you know, they need accessible role models, and they need role models that reflect their own society and their own cultures and their own background. So hopefully what I'm building within Rising Stars is a good mix of those individuals that with a passion to pay it forward and to continue the work that we do.
Lovely.
I absolutely love that. Thank you so much. I mean, as ever, like, I could sit and listen to Vanessa all day. Actually, one last question before we click off. Who's right. The story's your book? And you know, I've been like, I ask every 2 years, like,
when am I going to write another one?
Yeah. So what's
you know something? I was supposed to write it. There's a plan literally in my office. There's about 3 different books in that. All maps out. It's a case of time.
Yeah.
There is part of me that's saying there's a reason, and this may sound a bit crazy, there's a reason I haven't written that second book yet. There is something, there is another part of what of my journey that I need to write in that book, and it hasn't happened yet. So there's, and that isn't me being lazy or anything like that. Mm. That's just, if I wrote that book, I think I'd have to write one straight afterwards because of the kind of trajectory. I always said there'd be 3 books. There'd be Heels of Steel, which is coming out corporate. There'd be My Life as an Entrepreneur, and then there'd be My Life as a Philanthropist. So there's still 2 books in me, Vic, but you're just not getting one yet.
Yeah, I'll wait with bated breath. You know, I'll be the first person to buy it. Thank you so much for your
time. Thank you for having me. And Neil, so lovely to meet you.
Yeah, finally.
The feeling is so mutual.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll have to, well, when we get a nail next over to the UK in London, we'll have to get a glass of fizz in the diary. Yes, but thank you for everything that you've done to support our profession and been such a good champion, and also for allowing me to get up at Rising Stars most years prior to COVID and talk about the Not Just a Girls Job campaign as well, and the fact that we're doing a campaign for men. You've given me that platform to speak about that and gain more profile and get more traction and stuff. So
I'll always be with you, Vic. You can't get rid of me.
Oh, well, I love you. Love you to the moon and back. So thank you very, very much.
That's all right. Thanks for having me. And yeah, good luck with the mentoring program as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining this episode of the Assistant Lab. If you enjoyed this content, you know what you need to do. Feel free to share it and help us grow our subscriber base.
Join us again next time. And until then, keep experimenting, innovating, and improving your skill sets.